On tenor sax with Soul Station. This was a very popular album in 1960, and it was the title track of that album, along with Art Blakey on drums, Wynton Kelly on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and of course, as I said, Hank Mobley on tenor sax. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And as promised, we are going to proceed with the second installation of our series, which will get us to review this aftermath. Although that's a title, that's the last title of our series called The Aftermath. As you know, last Wednesday's acquittal of President Donald Trump on two articles of impeachment unleashed ubiquitous reaction. Trump and Republicans openly thumbed their noses at Democrats who failed, they said, to convict their leader, doubling down on an electoral clean sweep this year. At least that's what they're hoping for. And frankly, it looks like they may get it. Disheartened Democrats, on the other hand, vowed to give Trump and his supporters no easy victories. That too has begun to happen. So we'll discuss part two of the four-part series that we talked about last week on Trump's impeachment. This chapter titled The Middle. We're discussing how Trump's impeachment trial spawned an aggressive effort by the Democrats and Republicans, the mainstream political parties that dominate Congress, as well as state and local governments, for total control. It has begun. We see a very vengeful Trump already beginning to exercise pieces of the plan. And its aim is simply to take total control. All the while, one could imagine that he had his minions planning different pieces of it, of this plan. But now it is going to be fully unleashed. We see that he has a $4.8 trillion budget that leaves no room for cuts, military cuts, even increasing the Pentagon's budget, but with considerable thought given to cutting social programs like food stamps and public assistance and so forth. You could imagine that those would be the kinds of cuts that he envisions making. In today's installment, what we want to talk about is, from your perspective, how did it come about, this most recent development? I have to ask you for some special consideration today. I told you I had fallen recently and had a very bad accident. So now I'm trying to get my jaws and teeth realigned. So you may hear a little whistling. But this is life. We'll get through it. So I beg your pardon with the extra noise effects. Okay. So this is what I would like you to help us with, which is, we're talking about part two, and in this installment, we want to talk about how the process of impeaching Trump, the process of him confronting and coming before the joint session in Congress and really opening up on them, especially with a tone that suggested it was only going to get worse. I want you to go back to that time, it was just last week, and bring us into your perspective of what actually happened when that session was called, and what came out of it. What did you see as the intended purpose? Was it realized? What did the Republicans do as opposed to the Democrats? What did it mean to you at all? What are we to expect coming out of that process, which we witnessed? It was a big deal. Lots of drama, lots of coverage, and we saw a pretty disturbing side of the president, but we also saw a disturbing side on the part of many Democrats. And I want us to talk about that, because there were some very pointed things that they communicated without having to say a word. And they foretold what the nature of the relationship, if there is to be one, between the presidency and Congress. So that's where we're going today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get this moving in the direction of kind of peeling this onion away, the layer by layer, finding out what it is that we were supposed to be paying attention to, and we might have missed it. But it is important to bring it out into the open, because so much of what we will experience in the future, the hints were there for us to see, to listen to, and question, did we actually get it. Mark from New York, you starting us off today.
Yes, greetings, and we wish you the best health-wise.
Thank you.
I'd like to know whether you felt outside or inside your home.
Outside.
Okay, because the concern was reorganizing the home space, but it was an outside fall. So you know that we wish you the best, and take your time and heal well. Okay.
Thank you so much. I hope you can put up with a little whistle, extra whistle.
We don't even really hear that. I assure you.
Okay, good.
Yes, in terms of your question and concerns, first of all, at some point I need some clarification about what you were referring to in terms of a Democrat behavior being equivalent to the perfidy of the Republicans. Now, let us remember that people like Lindsey Graham, who, you know, kisses Trump's ring, as it were, and his knee, et cetera, told everyone that the Republican Party, if Trump were the nominee, et cetera, would be destroyed. And that's what I see coming on, because when you have a trial and you decide there are to be no witnesses and you don't want to bring out the full story around national security, et cetera, it tells you all you need to know about the Republicans. I find them reprehensible. I find that if the Democrats don't really take charge of not just electing the next president and keeping the House, but if they don't turn around the Senate, which has some inherent inequalities built in, that all could be lost, because important bills are held up and you have one man, McConnell, Moscow Mitch, if you will, who controls just the reprehensible, unutterable behavior that comes from them. The viciousness, the overt racism they've embraced in Trump. And I would like to clarify what you, I mean, I loved it when Pelosi tore up the speech in terms of all those lies and misrepresentation. It turns out that the young girl from Philadelphia was already in a government charter school, so this whole framing of government failed schools and she's getting a scholarship, it shows he was doing a quid pro quo on each one of his circus reality show performances. And so Pelosi,
but didn't you miss the point? Don't you think you missed the point of the choreography of this whole event? The point is, you're reacting, and this was exactly why it was designed this way. You're reacting very personally. If you were to take an objective view, would it be the same? Why aren't you seeing it as a plan that was successfully executed? And the Democrats were in no position to counter anything. Even with this Pelosi thing of, you know, oh, she's tearing up copies of his speech, and it's all silly. The fact is, what we needed to see from Democrats at that time didn't exist. They didn't have one weapon to fight with. They never presented one weapon to fight with. All of their rancor came afterwards, when the whole thing was over. But during the process, it was all theater. They had nothing else. Trump and the Republicans came, you know, gunning for bear. They were ready. They had already put in place, you know, the whole scenario, the atmosphere, and it was to make Trump victorious. Even though I agree with you, he was loathsome. He couldn't have been more so. The fact is, they won. That's the bottom line. How they won, why they won, they leave that to us to quibble about. The issue is that they won, hands down. So our emotional reaction is just that. We're being very emotional. Because we didn't see a fight there. That was a massacre. That was a massacre. The Democrats had nothing to offer in the way of resistance. Not real resistance that tackled the Republicans on their turf. Do you see what I'm saying?
Somewhat, but I'm also looking to the longer term, okay, and what could come out of that, because the Republicans are so disgraceful and so obviously looking to set up, as black and brown people become the so-called minority majority, I think they want to set up an apartheid system is where they're headed.
No, but you see, being emotional. This should not come as a surprise to you at all.
No, it was a surprise.
But the fact that they would go there. They went there. Those were the weapons that they used. They had to do something rather dramatic to rebuild their stance within their own political base while they destroyed, utterly, they destroyed any chance that the Democrats could survive the wounds that they inflicted on them. They did the job. This is politics. We have to get emotion out of the way for the moment. It has nothing to do with the logistics of what was needed by the Republicans and the president at that time. They did everything that they were supposed to do. Throw everything into confusion, but keep pressing the point that under no circumstances do you allow the Democrats to have any credibility. They did it. They did a very good job. The Democrats were not prepared for that, and I don't understand why. Because you could see that coming for 20 miles. You could see that coming. They were totally unprepared. Are you there?
Yes, yes. I'm just mulling over what you're saying. That's all. Mm-hmm.
No, we are very emotional, which in situations like this, you have to be completely divorced from what you are witnessing in front of you, because that is not the story. What is happening in front of you is a diversion. It is to take you off your route. Your route should be purely analytical. What is happening? What am I observing? What are they trying to accomplish here? And they did a fabulous job. Within, a couple of hours, they dispatched the Democrats. They dispatched, they confused the Democratic political base. And they're on to the next thing. And they left Nancy Pelosi looking absolutely silly, sitting there, because she had nothing to offer. She had no weapons and she had no fight in her. So all she could do is tear up some paper and make it a big deal. It wasn't a big deal. She looked silly. And she forecast the reality that at that moment, the Democrats were done. Trump ate them up and spat them out. They had nothing. No wonder she had to go. By the way, she had those pages pre-nudged. So when she decided to tear, she knew exactly where to tear the pages so that they would tear in half and look like it's a big thing. But think of how silly that was.
It didn't strike me like that. I felt just in the same symbolic way that Trump announces racism at the beginning of his campaign against Mexicans as criminals and rapists. To me, the symbolism, it gave me some relief to see her deal with the fact that it was a bunch of lies, reality show style, manufactured.
But look what you're saying. Look what you're saying. It gave you some relief. What gave you relief was symbolism. What should have given you relief was a real fight. They didn't have anything to fight with. They could not put Trump out of our misery. So you tear up some pages and people make a big deal about, that was, I hope. Trump is not even remotely connected with that symbolism.
Well, yeah.
He's taking care of real business. He's taking care of real business. Every Republican was in there taking care of business, following orders. They have instructions. The Democrats were not to score any points, and they were reduced to tearing up paper for the whole world to see. You have nothing. You have no weapons except some pieces of paper. And even that you cheated at, because you notched the papers where you wanted to tear them. So that, you see, you have to get, I'm not saying that you're wrong or anything like that. I think you make some solid points. I'm just saying when you start the business of analyzing, there's no room for sentimentality. There's no room for symbolism. You look at the hard business. They came together to engage in a fight. One side had most of the weapons. The other side had paper to tear. That was all she could offer. Now, that is something that should worry Democrats. The party did not put up a fight because it couldn't. If you look at it that way, you will see a whole different perspective on what happened in that scenario. And a guy who should have been kicked out unceremoniously is victorious. A guy of very average intellect. A guy who should not have been in that office to begin with. Nonetheless, he destroyed them. And they still haven't gotten over it. They still don't know how. What are the Democrats going to be fighting with? What are their tools? What are their weapons? They have none. They have nothing. So the best that they could do is give us theater. There's nothing substantive about what they're there to do. They're not engaged. They're not even recognizing their constituency and say, well, okay, we're lousy, but for the sake of our constituency, we put up one hell of a fight before we go home. That was not to be had. That was the tragedy of that day. watching the Speaker of the House, the big old Democratic leader, sitting there looking like a madwoman, tearing up a copy of his speech. Silly. Silly. Thanks, Ma'at, for getting us started today. John from New York, you're on the air.
If you're saying John from New Jersey, that would be me.
Oh, it said, okay, John from New Jersey. All right.
You know what? I'm so sick and tired of hearing the word fight. There is no fight in the Democratic Party. They're a bunch of cowards. This is why I am not a Democrat anymore. These people, they steal, they lie, they cheat, and we're supposed to be honest, and we're supposed to be forthright, and treat them with respect. My you-know-what. The only way to deal with these people is to deal with them the same way they deal with you. Lie, cheat, do whatever it takes to beat them. And even if that means throwing chairs in Congress. I see these Latin American countries where when they have a disagreement, it is a fight. Blood is drawn. And it's insane to sit here and listen to this nonsense about how we should treat the proper circumstance. We should follow these rules. What rules? They don't follow the rules. I ask every Republican out there, when was the last time a Democrat assassinated a president? Never. That's the problem. We cannot sit on our laurels and let these people walk all over us. That's what they're doing. They'll look at the start of fight. And it's about time we really did have a fight and stop treating them with respect. They don't deserve any respect. That's all I have to say about it. And the other thing is this. Why should we have anything to do with them? He should have walked out of the White House a long time ago. They had the evidence. They sat on it. I'm afraid. We're going to ruin the country. The country is being ruined right beneath our feet. It's insanity to sit here and be nice. I don't want to be nice anymore. You have a good day. Bye.
All right. Well, thank you, John. Ed from L.A., you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. I hope you feel better and get better.
Yes, I will. I can't wait to get rid of this whistle.
I don't really hear it. The thing I got last week was the Republicans won so much and decimated Democrats so much that they don't look at them as even a co-equal branch of government. They don't even look at them as a legitimate branch of government. And that's what's very troubling. The other thing I noticed was Nancy Pelosi enthusiastically stood, as did the other Democrats, when they had Guaido from Venezuela there, an illegitimate person who they claim is the leader of Venezuela. I saw her enthusiastically stand. So once again, we see the Democrats are all for regime change. And with Trump, he's insulted Latinos and he's courting the black vote. That was a campaign speech, and that was a speech to fire up his base to come out and vote. That was not a State of the Union address. That was a campaign fire up his base to come vote for him in November speech.
Yeah, because he used the opportunity to utterly and completely quash the opposition. I mean, he just did away with them. What was most significant, you would say, about what happened in that particular time?
When you're talking about the State of the Union, the impeachment, or are you talking about the entire situation?
So far, yes.
Well, for me, again, what I got was in order to impeach a president, in today's world, both your Congress and your Senate have to be of the opposite party and dominance. That's what we have today. You cannot get rid of a president if you have another branch like the Senate that's dominated by the party of the same person that's president of the United States. That's what we have today. You cannot get rid of a president unless you are of the opposite party, and that party is dominated in both branches of government. So that means the Senate and the Congress would have to be totally democratically dominated for a president of Trump to be impeached or gotten rid of. That's in today's world.
Did you realize, I mean, were you aware of what was happening when it was happening?
Yes, I was aware of when it was happening, what was happening.
Okay. So tell me what you were feeling at the time it was happening.
That democracy is in total demise, that there is no check and balances on the President of the United States. He's completely protected by the Senate, and we don't have any checks and balances anymore in this country. Mm-hmm. The media doesn't scrutinize the president. The media doesn't do its job. So in my mind, we have a runaway president with authority that's unchallenged. And, you know, I kind of equate the Democrats in the Roadrunner Coyote cartoon. the Roadrunner's always getting away. And the coyote's always doing illegitimate things to try to get the Roadrunner, and they never get him. He always gets away, but the coyote always ends up having the boulder fall on him when he goes off the cliff. And that's kind of how the Democrats remind me of. They're the coyote, and they never get the Roadrunner. He always gets away. And he's always smarter. That's my take on this whole thing. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel about it.
Okay. Well, it's actually appropriate. There's something there to explain what we saw. You think we're making too much of this?
No, I don't. I think this is a big deal, and I think it makes a big statement in today's world. And again, I called in last week, and I mentioned this, and I think this is something worth really reflecting on. It's what Attorney General Barr had mentioned after, to kind of put the nail in the Democrats' coffin, that if any political candidate were to be investigated from now on, since he and he alone, they would have to come to him, and he would decide whether a political candidate mm-hmm. would warrant investigation. That's very troubling. Not Absolutely. The Justice Department, he and he himself.
And none of this is happening behind closed doors. It's not being hidden. It's out there now, right in our faces. And we see no resistance to
Absolutely
speak of.
Absolutely none.
Thank you so much for calling in today. Thank you.
Thank you.
E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I pretty much was going to say what the caller just was on. It was like a foregone conclusion because they have the majority in the Senate. It wasn't going to happen. It was really a futile attempt because they know that majority rules, so it was done before it started, the way I saw it. The real question is, can Nancy Pelosi close her eyes at night when it's time for her to go to sleep? Or is her skin so tightly pulled back that she can no longer close her eyes, because that's the way it appears to me.
Now you're getting personal.
Well, you know, I'm going by what I'm seeing. She's 80. She's closing in on 80, and I don't know how she has time for any political stuff, government stuff, because it looks like all she's doing is getting more and more surgery done on her face. So she wants to be the queen of the Congress, I guess.
I think she just likes the eternally surprised look.
Yeah,
it's she looks like she's always surprised.
The deer in the headlights look, you know, because they had to pull her skin.
What
so
were you
tight.
Thinking when this was going down? What thoughts crossed your mind?
Like I said, it's just a waste of time. It's a big show, a lot of drama. People like drama. Everything's turning into wrestling now in every sense of the word, in every facet of the way. It's all drama. People love the hype. They love this drama stuff, you know. They can't get enough of it. Now they're going to start another football league because, you know, they can't do without football. And it's going to be the guy who does the wrestling, you know. It's amazing what the world has turned into. It's just, I think we'd all be better off just ignoring it all. But, you know, we got life to, you know, we have to, guess we have to do something to take up our time with. So it's this government show that we're like, can't stop tuning into. You know, I don't mean to be, cynical, but it's hard not to be.
I understand where you're coming from, and you're making your point very clear. Thank you so much for calling in, E.
Thanks.
From Edgewater. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon to my beloved. Good afternoon to my beloved sister and my parent family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
I was taught in school that the people is the government. They are just only people that represent us in Washington. They have managed to make us think they are the government. As far as I've learned, is we are the government. We elect them to represent us. I don't understand.
You clearly do, because you just said it.
What? What do you mean?
You understand
they
how government
are supposed
works.
They are supposed to represent us, and they're supposed to do our bidding. But they have somehow managed to make us think they are the government, and they tell us what to do, and we work for them. It's the other way around from what I've learned. But anyway, the point I was...
Going specifically to what happened, what did you extract from that you think is very, very important for us not to ignore?
I missed the first part of your programming. I didn't hear what the question was.
No, we're just talking about... This is the second installment that we're doing, and... we're trying to decipher how these things happen repeatedly, but we miss all the cues, to miss the cues, so that we are reacting literally to something when in fact there's a whole other level that we should be paying attention to, but we just don't connect with it.
Well, the reason why I think, first of all, I don't pay any attention to this stuff, because it's just a charade, a show. Now, I think what they're doing and what they have managed to do is to take our mind. This is why they're behaving the way they are. It's just a test on us, because, you know, the things that we are facing that are of real concern. Healthcare, you know, homelessness, you know, the weather, the climate change, These are things that are really, really of concern to us, because we have to survive this. So, but because they have managed to take our minds, they could run it, play any game or not, because we're not in the right mind.
They have managed to take our minds. You totally write yourself out of the equation, as if
absolutely.
I'm saying if that is your interpretation of it, that somebody's doing something to you, the flip side of that coin is that you are allowing it to happen to you. You're not presenting an argument that I am exercising my power this way.
I don't know how to answer what you're asking, because I can't be caught up in this. Because I'm quite aware that, you know, this is just totally disrespect and madness. Democracy. I've heard a lot of people saying democracy. What democracy? This is hypocrisy.
Yeah, but I want you to get straight to the issue we're discussing.
Okay.
We had face-offs. What should have been a face-off? And it never occurred. Why did it not occur between the Democrats and the Republicans?
Simply because it's one party. It's one party. It's as simple as that. You've done many, many programs to show us that it's one party, just by deducting. Deductive reasoning is just one body. So to look to the Democrats for anything other than what we're seeing is just idiotic, in my judgment.
Somehow I think there ought to be something else in your argument.
Well, you know.
Because up until that particular event, you got the sense that people who identified themselves as Democrats, having a great investment in the Democrats winning against Trump, finally driving the stake through his heart. That's what you got the sense of. You tuned in to watch because you wanted to see them actually make the case and making it stick, but it didn't happen.
No, you cheese. First of all, I don't have a television. That's number one. So I mean, even if I did, I wouldn't even waste my time watching that kind of stuff, because it's an insult to my intelligence. I have enough sense from what I've learned from PRN to make a fool out of me. I got a little, not much sense, but I got a little sense enough to know that this is just a game they're playing at our expense.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see how people are reacting to what you're saying today. Thanks
love
for
you,
calling
beloved.
In.
Love
Thank
you.
Thank you too. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, David, you're on the air. Okay, we move on. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. How you doing?
Hello. Okay, how about you?
Well, you know me and my thumbs. We're still hanging there. Enough said with that. You know where I stand on this whole impeachment political theater. As far as what I think the question you're asking is to what I think is important that we should take away from this. I believe, like C.W. Fields said, all politics is local. And if you look at this whole thing, I mean, in its whole circumference, you'll see at the beginning is the Tea Party, the local efforts of people who had a certain opinion, agree with it or disagree, and how they took over their local government, how they gerrymandered political districts, and how they gained the power to control the national vote. And that's the only solution. All politics is local. You've got to take over your local house. You can't clean somebody else's house until you've cleaned your own house. And until we decide to locally control the mechanisms of this quote-unquote faulty political system, we're always going to be at the bay of the powers that be. And it's a process. Everything in this country, everything in life that's worth having is a process going through. And it's going to be heartache. There's going to be struggle. Like Frederick Douglass said, power can seize nothing without a demand. And you're going to have to struggle against it. But you're going to have to, the price of liberty is vigilance. And these aren't slogans, but this is what it takes. The Tea Party took their fringe values and turned them into a working organization. And this is what we get after all is said and done. And if we want to get the things that we need as people, that's how we're going to have to twist the arm of this government. That's what I take away from this. This fringe person who had no political experience whatsoever and basically played the numbers game of the Electoral College, got in a position of power and can't be knocked out. And shame on us for not being vigilant and taking control of our local offices. So if we can't change nationally, at least we can control locally what's happening to us. And that's what we need to take away from this, in my humble opinion.
Is the Democratic Party finished?
Yes.
Given what has happened so far?
The Democratic Party is a relic. The Republican Party is also a relic. I believe that all party politics are going to become a relic in this country in the next 10 to 20 years because there's an uprising among the people. And people aren't identifying with political archetypes. They're identifying with issues. Can I get a house? Can I eat? Can I make a decent wage? Can I pay my medical bills? If you really look at what's going on in this country, that's what the common man is worried about. And I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're white, yellow, black, gay, straight, green, yellow, purple. The bottom line is if you're with something that I'm with you.
So what does that leave us? Are we just waiting for the big boulder to drop? And
no.
Pretty much have the Republicans finish the Democrats off and get it over with, expecting that there will be no real resistance.
They're finishing off each other. They're political animals addicted to power. And Donald Trump is just a personification of all of the evil that has gone on since the days of Reagan. I mean, there's no more pretense of fairness. There's no more pretense of helping the people. There's no more pretense of political or civic service. They're just in it to win it. You understand what I'm saying? And they're defeating themselves because there's a younger generation that's coming up. They're seeing that you've got to take care of your fellow man if you want to survive. And the only thing that we really have on our side is time because these people are dying left and right. And eventually the old guard is going to be gone and we're going to have something new. But like everything else in this country, nothing happens overnight and nothing happens without a struggle and nothing happens without a process. And we're going through that process right now.
When this was going on, the dramatic tearing up of the speech, did you understand what it really was? An admission by Nancy Pelosi that they have nothing to fight with.
Well, it was an admission of their weakness. It was an admission of their ineptitude. I know the theatrical, oh, look, I disgrace. But the bottom line is you allowed this to go. If you were so adamantly against this man, against these policies, against these things happening, nothing happens in a vacuum. You understand what I'm saying? I'm a mechanic. Machines, systems, they fail over time. If you don't change the oil on your car, eventually your engine's going to seize up. If you don't take care of your heating system, if you don't change the filters, if you don't service it in a proper manner, eventually it's going to fail. They saw this happening. but they profited from it. And as long as they could profit from it, they allowed it to continue to the point that now where they have outlived their usefulness because they don't have any more usefulness. They don't have any direction. They're just concerned with how can I secure myself financially and within the power structure as it is toward the immediate future. And that's not going to cut it no more.
All right. Well, I would hire you as a political consultant any day. Because you have a clear understanding of things.
Well, I like to be clean, so I can't, you know, I feel like taking a shower and deal with those people most of the time.
Well, thank you for calling in and contributing, Ed. Good to hear from you today.
Thank you.
Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey. Hi, Eugene.
How you doing?
Okay, I hope you're feeling much better.
On this idea that the Democratic Party was reduced to play acting and symbolism because they realized, or they came to realize, they had no weapons against Trump.
My problem, though, with this whole reasoning that I hear being put forward by you and a couple of other people, especially that fellow, I think he was from California, said that the Democratic Party have no fight in them. What does that mean? I thought that the business of both parties, the business of government, was supposed to be about the people's business. And does that mean that, supposing this was a hoax, suppose it was really a hoax, which I think it is, but I'm just going to say supposing it was, and the Democratic Party had won, would that have been good? You know, so I don't see this as the Democratic Party is not putting up a good fight. Are they telling the truth? Are either sides telling the truth? It's just like saying we're going to war, and I like when I hear people talk about the Vietnam War. They say America shouldn't have gone. And you ask them why. They said because it was not a winnable war. So even though it was unjust, if they could win, they should go? These are the kind of questions I think we should ask. To me,
well, because those kinds of questions also ignore where people are. People in a particular time, they are not given to philosophical debates. They want solutions. They want answers. And yes, it is appropriate to expect that the side that you are on, you would want your side to fight and win.
No,
why is that objectionable?
I am about truth. And if you show me, Eutrice, where my argument is incorrect, I'll jettison it. Instantly.
It's not that your argument is incorrect. It's that I disagree with it. Totally.
Well, it could be incorrect,
I'm not saying you're incorrect. I'm saying I disagree with it totally based on what politics has come to be. We have a situation existing now with a very difficult president and a party that is mimicking him all the way in his conduct, in his behavior, in his actions, and so forth. In other words, this is a fight. You will not win against Donald Trump by being philosophical. He has no appreciation for that. He has no time with that. Either you are stronger or you are weaker than he is. Those are the only options. So if you intend to make any progress against a president like that, you have to be prepared to fight. How could you not be prepared to fight? You going to go up against Donald Trump with political philosophy and end up talking to yourself over and over again because he's not listening? You have to see this as a jousting match. Somebody's got to win. This is not about, well, we appreciate each other's arguments and thank you so much for your time. This is that by the end of a certain period, there's going to be a winner, there's going to be a loser. Which one do you want to be? If you're looking to come away from the experience simply satisfied that you've had meaningful exchange in your mind with your adversary, then this is not the business for you. This is not the arena. You'll never understand this arena. We didn't ask for it. We were given this. And we had, presumably, people who knew and still know how to fight. There was no fight there. No fight at all. And when she rose up and people were cheering this thing, not even recognizing or realizing, they were cheering her submission. They were cheering her declaration that she gave up. There is no fight in the Democratic Party at that time when that happens. You literally are throwing in the towel. Why should we continue with you? That's a question we should be asking as people who may be affiliated with the Democratic Party. Why should I support that? If you are my representative and you are content to tear up pages of a speech as if it means anything, as if it gains you any ground, as if it does something to alter the circumstances that we find ourselves in, then I don't know what to say. Maybe it's the Brooklyn in me. You know, there's going to be a fight, let's fight. I'm not interested in philosophy and all this sophistry that we're talking about. We have to fight for our lives. We have to fight for our survival. You say that you are the people representing our quest for some kind of justice, and we're banking on you. And at the height of the fight, you back away and you tear up a couple of pages, and everybody is, look what she's doing. How incredibly significant. I don't care about your significance, and I care about you winning. And since this is your version of winning, I now am left with new decisions that I have to make. See? That's the way we ought to interpret it. Thanks so much, Lincoln, for calling in. Thank you all for calling in and contributing so meaningfully. You see, it's important to pay attention to the little things that people are not paying attention to, because they're telling you something right to your face, and you're not seeing it. I could tear up my own pages if I wanted to, but I want to fight. I want to see my people representing me fighting. I want them to show us that they understand that they have to fight. And if they can't fight or won't fight, they need to get out, or we need to put them out. Thanks so much. We join each other again tomorrow.